This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
So we knew it was coming and now it's here. A strain of bird flu that's killed millions of birds overseas. So what is going to happen in Australia and how easy does it spread? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we're getting into this bird flu story. Also, how does a nice morning beach swim in the middle of winter sound to wake you up? Because we're going to hear from those turning to all kinds of activities like that to beat loneliness.
It's just a great way to meet new people, and I think people need more of that these days because it's a very... can be feeling lonely out there.
Yeah, also keen to hear from you as well on that one. First, though,
Hack.
OpenAI's Sam Altman said our country could become the data centre capital of the world.
On Triple J.
Yeah, they're popping up across the country, tens of billions of dollars being poured into them. Experts saying it's like another mining boom. So what are data centres? And how would you feel if one just started up near you? Because while some are saying the opportunities are endless, others are warning these centres are not worth the risk to the environment and maybe to security as well. In a bit, you're going to hear from Independent Senator David Pocock, who's got a bit to say about this. But first, Shannon Schubert's been looking into data centres.
What's it like living across the road from an AI data centre?
It's huge. It's big, it's loud, the construction's annoying.
The crane right over there has these like big blue lights that go straight through the, even when we've got the blinds down, goes right into your eyes all night.
Lucy and Felix both live in West Footscray, close to an AI data centre that's expanding. Conversations around where this tech is built and approved are heating up as we see a boom in the number of applications for new data centres with the rapid growth of AI. And there's been backlash in some communities.
We're in Rootidor, Queensland, the sunny coast. This is an AI data centre being built right here along the beach.
We do not want multi-billion dollar industries to set up these environmental catastrophes in our backyard.
But first, what even is a data centre? It's a building that contains computer equipment like servers and routers, and it runs all day every day to process, store and manage digital data. And as Footscray resident Lucy points out, they support how we live.
Can't have a smartphone and data and storage in cloud without having somewhere to put it.
Data centres aren't new. Every time you open an email, watch Netflix, scroll TikTok or use AI, all of those things require a data centre to process information. In fact, we already have 162 in Australia and there are around 90 more in the pipeline. Melbourne's West is becoming a data centre hub. There are five in Footscray, with one expanding to double the size and an application for another one nearby. But most Footscray residents I spoke to, including Philip Webb, say they're not too fussed about the big data centre down the road.
Because it's really out of any earshot or anything like that for me personally, it doesn't really affect me.
But Lorna has concerns.
Initially, we didn't realise how big it was going to be, and we thought the data centre was only going to be the one that's actually built at the moment, and didn't quite realise it was going to be six times the size, and it's an enormous block, so it's huge.
One of the big concerns for people is energy consumption. Currently, data centres use about 2% of the electricity in Australia's main grid. That's the equivalent to 700,000 homes. But Climate Council CEO Amanda McKenzie says that could grow to more than 13% by 2040.
And the risk is if you suddenly bring on a whole lot of new demand into the system, that it will extend the life of coal-fired generators, even if the data centre companies are asking for renewable energy from the grid.
They also use a lot of water as part of their cooling systems that run 24/7.
Greater Western Water, for instance, mid-2025, they had applications totaling about 4% of Melbourne's annual water consumption. In Sydney, that could be even higher.
Data Centres Australia CEO Belinda Dennett says there's a lot of misinformation around data centres derailing the renewable energy transition.
This is one of the most forward-leaning industries on supporting the energy transition.
She says data centres are already voluntarily underwriting renewable energy projects that otherwise would not have been built.
So we think the data centre industry is actually helping us build a more resilient and a cleaner energy grid for the future.
This is a once-in-a-multi-generation investment boom that is engulfing the world.
Australia's AI data centre boom was one of the biggest contributors to growth in the economy earlier this year.
The AI investment boom, as I said, might have as profound an effect on our economy as the resources boom.
Assistant Minister for Digital Economy, Andrew Charlton, says the federal government will require data centres invest in new renewable energy to rely on.
We're going to require that data centres pay their full share of network infrastructure costs to ensure that those are not passed on to consumers or businesses.
In March, the government released a list of expectations for data centre developers, including sustainable water and energy management. But there's been criticism of the expectations as they're opt-in and not legally binding. The government says it's working to get the balance right. The debate, end construction, continues across the country. For the Footscray residents that have a data centre at their front door, it doesn't worry them enough to move away, but they say it has become bigger and louder than they expected.
It's a lot to live across from, I guess.
I'm sure there are far more appropriate places for data centres than 20 metres away from the front door of houses.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Shannon Schubert reporting there, and a lot of thoughts coming through on data centres on the text line now. Someone saying, nothing like building a water evaporation machine in a country that frequently struggles with drought. Another person questioning the impact this could have on power bills. Someone else saying these data centres are shockers. They're not good for Australia, is that person's opinion there. Well, look, someone who does have big thoughts on what is going on here is Independent Senator David Pocock, and he's with us now from our Parliament House studio. Senator Pocock, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Dave. Great to be with you.
Some are comparing this investment in data centres in Australia with the mining boom. Do you think it's a good thing?
Well, I'm really concerned in the rush from the government to welcome this investment and essentially prop up GDP. We're not actually asking the question, how will Australians benefit from this? How do we ensure that we have the right regulations in place, the right processes, and I think critically, the right tax settings so that when big multinationals set up shop here with something like a data centre, we actually benefit and we're thinking about things like energy and water. The government, every time you ask them about this, they say, well, we've got national expectations. These are voluntary expectations that, you know, the CEO of one of the biggest data center companies in Australia told Alan Kohler on his podcast that these are basically just the rules that we currently have that they've chucked on a website.
Do you think we should be encouraging this investment, though? You're saying we need to have some rules around this, that we need to be making sure we're getting our fair share. But do you think that overall the investment will be a good thing?
Depends how it's done. I think that's the critical part of this. Yes, we need data centres, and I think we need to distinguish between Australian-owned, sort of sovereign-owned data centres where the data is kept here in Australia, and then what they're calling these sort of big hyperscalers, these big multinationals that want to set up data centres here to either, you know, provide compute power for their training AI models or for things like storage and other things. So, yeah, I think there's a bit of nuance to the conversation, but I'm just really concerned that the government is not doing the hard work of, one, actually ensuring that the Australian people benefit, and then, two, on the other side of things, if you ask the bigger question, what's this for? It's to speed up the development of AI. And in that space, the government has been missing in action. We have no AI Safety Act. We basically have almost no guardrails for this technology.
I want to get into AI in a little second, but first, I mean, the peak body representing data centres is saying any change to penalties or regulations around these centres could deter AI investment here. Is that something that you think Australia should be mindful of driving away investment at such a critical time when everyone's trying to get a piece of this pie?
Dave, the thing that concerns me about where this conversation is at is it sounds exactly like the gas industry. This is what they say. They say, well, you know, if you make any changes, then we won't come and invest. And you really want, you know, tens of billions of dollars worth of investment, because then the Australian people will benefit. That happened, you know, a couple of decades ago. We now pay international prices for our own gas. We're constantly told that we're going to have a gas shortage, just despite being one of the biggest gas exporters in the world. And we're not getting a fair return. So let's pause before we, you know, allow these big multinationals to set up shop here and actually say, you have something that we want, that we have something that you want. We have a stable democracy. We've got land. We've got renewables. what are we going to get in exchange? And I don't think the government is doing that. They seem hell-bent on rushing to allow big multinationals to come here. And, you know, these same multinationals, when you look at tax received by the Australian government, they are pretty creative with their accounting and masters at profit shifting and not paying tax here in Australia.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Senator David Pocock. We're talking about data centres and the potential impact of them. We know a lot are planned for Australia. There's a lot of investment as well coming from overseas into this very issue. A lot of people on the text line got big thoughts on this. Some people concerned about potential environmental impacts. Other people saying maybe the investment is a good thing. And, you know, we have heard from some regional communities who have said that they're pretty excited by the prospect of maybe creating some jobs during the construction phase and the ongoing phase of these data centres. Senator Pocock, with AI, I mean, firstly, I've got a question for you. Do you use AI?
Yeah, my team and I use AI. We're very open with about that, and it can be a good way to process information and make the team more productive. I guess my concern is at a federal level, we're not asking the question about, well, what is the misuses of AI and how do we stop that? And two, what's the end point? What are we heading towards, a situation where, you know, even Jobs and Skills Australia, some kind of, you know, this body set up to look at employment in Australia and what's coming, what we should be preparing for, they're sort of the head of Jobs and Skills Australia said that they reckon there'll be at least 600,000 people jobs displaced, lost to AI. And the government just doesn't seem to have a plan for that. I think that is, one, it's so infuriating that we have this short-term decision-making that means that Australians pay the price when vested interests get their way. And I just don't think it cuts it. So there are so many questions to be answered in terms of where they're going to get electricity, where they're going to get water, where they'll be located. And I don't think we should be seeing data centres in residential areas, as we've seen in some parts of Australia and are seeing in the US.
Senator, I understand you've heard from a whistleblower who's had some stuff to say about copyright laws. What have they told you?
I'm hearing some pretty concerning reports that the government is preparing to do a major backflip on its earlier promise, where they categorically ruled out a text and data mining exception to our copyright laws. So essentially would be saying data centres, AI companies can mine Australian artists, authors, news sites, basically everything. And in exchange, you know, they'll pay some money, $350 million a year into a fund for the creative arts. And in exchange, Australia gets, you know, $50 billion of investment in data centres with an expedited approvals process. That doesn't sound like a great deal to me when you think of all the Australian artists, authors, and what their copyright is. That's their work. They should be paid for their work. And I find it astounding that the government, particularly after promising that this wouldn't happen, are now considering throwing that all away and saying to these big AI companies, yep, build your data centres here, train your models, and you have access to all Australian content. Don't worry about any copyright laws.
To be clear, we don't know that the government is considering this. Hack approached the government about it, and we know that the government's previously rejected a text and data mining exception. And the Attorney General's spokesperson told us that the government's repeatedly said that there are no plans to weaken copyright protections when it comes to AI. And then we heard from the Industry and Innovation Minister, Tim Ayres, whose office told us the government has been clear that there are no plans for a text and data mining exception. Do you have any reason to believe that this could get across the line, Senator?
Well, I've heard them say they're not going to do a lot of things. In the current debate, I'm probably not going to put much weight on that. I've been really concerned about this, been working with artists and others to really ensure that this is an issue that the government is aware of, that they know that they're going to face an enormous backlash if they do put these AI companies ahead of all Australian artists, authors, journalists. Like, this is just ridiculous that this is actually being considered by the government. And I think we've got to push back and tell them that they need to put Australians before big multinationals who want to do whatever they want to do with our data.
Okay, well, we'll keep across that. And as I say, the government has, you know, previously denied that it is considering any changes to that effect, but we'll stay across it. Senator, there's some reports out today that a new party of independents could launch as early as this week. Is that happening?
I'm not sure about any timeline, Dave. I'm certainly not leading any of those talks and won't be joining whatever is announced. But right. I think it is a...
Can say definitely, sorry, that you won't be a part of any political party of independents, of so-called teals. You're not going to be signing up.
Well, I already have a political party to get above the line in the Senate. So I am technically the leader of my own party in the Senate, but that was very much to get on the ticket. Yeah, I'm listening to people I represent here in the ACT. There are many people who would like me to do something more and start some sort of party. Yeah, but at this stage, I'm pretty flat out just being senator for the ACT and working on all these various issues. But I'm really concerned about the direction we're heading in as a country. And I feel the frustration and I hear the frustration from Australians that they want better alternatives. They want politics done in a way that actually puts Australians first and is dealing with the root causes of these big challenges we face.
So have you been approached by any of these independents who are considering this to step forward and to be part of something like a political movement?
Yeah, I've chatted to a bunch of them, told them it's not for me.
Why don't you think it's for you? We heard from Zali Steggall earlier today, who said, look, there are potentially many benefits of joining forces and coming together and trying to claw back some of the votes that are maybe bleeding to other parties like One Nation or like Labor. Why do you think that wouldn't be a good idea in your circumstance?
Well, for me, my commitment is to people in the ACT. I was elected as an independent, and if I did anything, it would come from the people of the ACT. So as I said, I'm listening to people. There are many people who would like me to do something, but at this stage, I haven't sort of got that message loud and clear that people want that. And so, we're a couple of years out from the election. I'm going to keep pushing hard on all these issues that I think are really important, people in the ACT think are important and are clearly resonating across the country. It's a fascinating time in politics, and I welcome a contest of ideas and more good people in here who are in politics for the right reasons and just genuinely want to make a difference for the people that they're here to represent.
We'll be calling you up if later this week it's announced that you're leading this new political party, David Pocock. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dave.
Really appreciate it. Bye-bye. Right. We've got so many messages coming through. Lee saying, I work on multiple data centres currently. The amount of water and diesel these things consume is beyond belief. It's hard to see how it's going to benefit society in the long run, Lee says. Another person, as much as I want access to really great data, it shouldn't come at a cost to things like food security, for example, if we're in drought. And someone else saying, imagine living in an industrial area and then complaining when something industrial gets built. So we've got a few different opinions coming through on the text line, people who may be questioning these data centres and the impacts they could have or the arrangements that could be formed with authorities, but others who maybe think it's a good idea.
Hack.
Now the virus has been detected in Western Australia, triggering a nationwide emergency response.
On Triple J.
Yeah, this is something that's been leading the headlines over the past couple of days, causing havoc overseas. Now it's here. A strain of bird flu that's already wiped out millions of birds around the world. And there have been a couple of cases of H5N1 avian influenza confirmed in sick migratory seabirds that landed on Western Australia's shores. So what does that mean? What does it mean for our wildlife? What does it mean for industry? And also for us, for humans? Alice Angeloni explains.
We are the only continent in the world that until now has not had this strain on our shores.
It's been a waiting game, but now the wait is over.
This is obviously a very concerning situation, but it's one that we're prepared for.
The first case of the deadly H5 strain of bird flu was confirmed on Saturday after a wild seabird, a brown skua, found sick in Western Australia, tested positive.
This is the highly pathogenic strain of concern that has been circulating globally, and this is its first detection on mainland Australia.
Australia.
The sick bird was discovered by a vet walking along the beach near Esperance. A second case of the highly contagious virus has now been confirmed in another wild seabird also in WA. Federal Agriculture Minister Julie Collins.
Further testing has now confirmed that we also have the H5 bird flu in the northern giant petrel found in the same region.
But Environment Minister Murray Watt says none of this was unexpected.
At this point in time, we only have two confirmed cases, but we don't underplay the threat that this poses to wildlife and our agriculture sector in Australia should this become a wider outbreak.
So what's the backstory here?
This is something that we have been preparing for a number of years.
This has spread globally. It's been detected in neighbouring countries, and so it was really just a matter of time.
Well, since 2021, a deadly strain of bird flu has killed millions of chickens, ducks and wild animals across the globe. Dr. Beth Cookson from the Australian Chief Veterinary Office says these cases of bird flu have been detected in seabirds with breeding habitat in the sub-Antarctic, where cases have previously been reported.
They fly long distances over water for feeding, and unfortunately, in this case, they have been sick and it's meant that they have arrived on Australian shores.
But what does it mean now that we've got two cases? Well, it's very rare for bird flu to spread to humans, but poultry farmers say they're already taking precautions to protect their animals.
Every night the chickens come inside, doors close behind them.
Albany poultry farmer Colin Ford told the ABC he's locked his 40,000 chickens inside following confirmation of the deadly strain, which can spread through droppings and feathers.
On Friday night when all the chickens came in and the doors closed, under direction from the chief veterinary officer, we made sure that the doors haven't opened up just to keep all the chickens inside.
But what impacts could it have on wildlife if it spread?
The reality of the experience overseas is that once it is in nature, in wild populations, there are limited options in being able to contain it.
Experts have warned that spread of the disease could wipe out WA's black swan population.
We're very worried about the spread to the black swans, the little penguins and other wildlife in WA.
Aurelie LeBay, a marine ornithologist from the WA Seabird Conservation Network, is very concerned about how this will impact local wildlife, the black swans in particular.
They do not have the ability to mount an immune response to the virus. It's not in their DNA. So once they get sick, they will simply die.
She's also worried about two penguin colonies close to the city.
We can't stop the spread of the disease. However, to mitigate the impact, removal of carcasses early on and incinerating those carcasses helps limit the spread of the illness.
But the government says it's been preparing for this for a while.
Our government has funded $113 million worth of preparedness activities, and it's that work that has enabled training of vets so that they know what to look for. It's enabled the planning work that state and territories have done.
And has activated its national biosecurity response. Here's the Agriculture Minister, Julie Collins, again.
I want to reiterate that this is two birds that have been found with the H5 bird flu in an isolated area of Western Australia. There is no evidence of any mass mortalities, particularly in our wildlife.
Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni reporting there. And yeah, there is a lot of concern in communities about this bird flu strain arriving in Australia. We will keep you across major developments.
Hack. You just meet a variety of characters. Some of them you just click with, so you're just building that relationship with other people, getting out there, having a chat every day.
On Triple J. Yeah, look, we've never had more ways to stay in touch. But sometimes you really do need to see someone in person to fill up your cup. And we know this because even with all the benefits of modern technology, a lot of you are constantly telling us you're lonelier than ever. Well, some are trying to battle that by forcing themselves out of their comfort zone to make real connections. And it's become a big movement across the country. Larice Dixon's got more from Newcastle.
It's 6 a.m. and I've just got down to the beach here in Newcastle. It's dark, windy and cold. But dozens of young people are stripping off into their swimmers and cannonballing into the Merriweather ocean baths.
You just went for a dip. Be honest, how cold was it in the water this morning?
Very, very cold, very chilly. It's going to take a little bit to warm up.
This is a weekly ritual for some young people in Nui.
It's just a great, refreshing way to start the morning. Like, I feel like if I don't come to these sessions, then it's not a good start. It's not good enough.
Sam's 24 and he joined this community group called Moist Mondays late last year.
It's just a great way to meet new people, and I think people need more of that these days because it can be feeling lonely out there.
Community groups encouraging young people to connect over a cold plunge have been cropping up all over Australia.
It's amazing to see like the growth in the group and people bringing friends. And I think as we get further into winter, it's only going to get bigger.
Zali and a few others started up Moist Mondays last year. She reckons it's about more than just getting the blood pumping.
It's the conversations that we have afterwards, the coffee we get, everyone just chatting and getting to know each other. I think it's really special. I think we've tapped into something really special here.
This all started as a bunch of mates going for an early morning dip in Nui, but it's turned into something bigger. Moist Monday groups are running in Sydney and on the Gold Coast too. Some people come for the swim, but others like Sean are more interested in the people.
I actually hate the swim. Yeah. I'm just here for the coffee afterwards. It does get the blood flowing, that's for sure.
The word connection keeps popping up as I talk to people down here. And while we often hear about a loneliness epidemic among older Australians, there's a quiet crisis we don't hear about much.
Do you think, being a young person yourself in Newcastle, that there is a bit of an issue around loneliness between people of your age group?
Absolutely. And I think that it's something that's happened following COVID that probably isn't addressed enough, especially with the way uni's going with a lot more online courses. I think it's a big issue. And I think going to the small local groups and just doing something that's a pretty low maintenance activity is really nice.
A 2025 study by Ending Loneliness Together found more than 40% of young Aussies between 15 and 25 are lonely. The study found poor mental or physical health, living away from family or being unemployed are some of the biggest factors. And if you're not part of a community group or club, you're actually twice as likely to experience loneliness, especially if you're a young person living in rural or regional Australia.
I finished uni and then after that, all of my friends were at different life stages. They were still there, so then I just needed that connection with other people. So then I started attending to meet people when I was in that lower space.
Maguire's 24 and one of the leaders of the Nui Active Co, another community group helping to connect young people. They host events like pickleball, bowling and Pilates for people who might not be keen on an early morning dip.
Bit of stimulation and doing physical things together is a way to bring people together and to rely on each other, build up a bit of teamwork in a low-pressure environment so they can meet new people and just have that social interaction that we've been lacking.
Their remit is making social cool again.
I've met so many people through it and like I've tried so many different activities, also built up my self-confidence.
It can do absolute wonders for learning how to talk to people, connect with people, and finding those common interests that you meet people you wouldn't meet any other way.
Back down here at the baths, Zali and the Moist Monday crew are warming up with a coffee while watching the sunrise. She reckons young people should try to find their people, even if that means doing something new.
The big part of it is having that little bit of bravery and going out and trying one of these things and finding something that you love and finding something that works, and the connection and helping that loneliness will go away really quickly.
Hack on Triple J.
Laurice Dixon reporting there from Newcastle. Thank you, Laurice. And we're hearing from so many of you on the text line as well who are doing similar stuff, who say, yeah, this is a great idea. You need to get out there. If you want to beat the loneliness problem, you've got to make the effort to try and meet people in person. Someone who's on the line with us now is Kylie. Kylie, you've started a group called Surf Sisters, which is about getting young women into the water and surfing together. Why did you decide to start this group?
Well, hello. I moved to the area about 6 years ago and I didn't know any women, didn't know anyone, and I wanted to find some people to surf with. So, yeah, I just put the word out on Facebook. I started a group and asked around and, it just blew up straight away, pretty much. People just wanted to be in on it.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a real hunger for people to get involved with these groups. And as soon as they see something pop up, they're like, yeah, that's a great idea. I want to be part of it. I mean, have you made some real friendships as part of Surf Sisters?
Yeah, most of my friends are actually from Surf Sisters.
Wow.
And a lot of the girls, because Byron's a transient area, a lot of the girls are coming in and the first thing they want to do is connect with other women. And the best way to do that is, you know, share that shared passion of surfing. And we all love the ocean up here. That's why we live up here.
Yeah.
And we just wanted to get out there. And, you know, women, it's such a hard thing to find other people when you're moving to a new community.
I can imagine. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us, Kylie. We've also got Jordan on the line. Jordan, you're part of Darwin Stingers. How's that going for you?
Yeah, hi. It's going really well, thanks. It's a really inclusive group, like all ages. As a master swim club, all age groups as adults, so a good way to meet lots of different people who you might not otherwise meet.
Yeah, and I imagine, like, good for mental health as well, like getting out there, meeting new people, it makes you feel a lot better.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely in Darwin as well, a good way to beat the heat and keep active as well in a slightly cooler environment.
True, true. Thank you so much for chatting with us, Jordan. And we've also got Danica with us as well. Danica, you're with Bitches Who Hike. There's so many good groups out there. How do you find that?
Yeah, Bitches Who Hike has been a lifesaver in Townsville. It's such a good way to make friends, and starting the group has really given the girls in Townsville something to look forward to and a way to make new besties outside, which is great.
I love that. Danica, thank you so much for letting us know, and everyone else who's been in touch and telling us about the different groups they're part of. It sounds amazing, and it's definitely doing something to beat loneliness. That is all we've got time for on Hack for now.